I probably read the Silmarillion 3 or 4 times. It was one of the only books I had. And I know the thing forward and backwards. And honestly, Nina, you could flip through the Tolkien Companion right now, pick a random name that if it's only from the Silmarillion, I will probably be able to tell you where in the book it goes.
Elfhelm.
I don't know that one. Never mind.
You're listening to First Chapters, a podcast from Grey Cat Books, with your hosts, Engineer Mike and Nina McNamara. Ever wanted to know if the first few pages of a book were good enough to continue reading? Will a book be engaging enough, or will it bore you to death? Then keep listening. The plot thickens.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to First Chapters, the podcast about reading the first few chapters of books.
That is a good description. Even if you had never heard this podcast before and you were just asked at gunpoint, what is this podcast about? That would be exactly what you could say.
I am one of your hosts, Nina McNamara.
I am the other host, Engineer Mike.
And today we have a special guest. This is a first chapters first.
Yep.
A first chapters first?
That's actually true. No, that's correct. That's correct grammar.
Okay.
First, start quotation marks, first chapters, end quotation marks, first.
Well, we can discuss the grammaticalness, the grammatical...
Grammaticity.
The grammaticity of that sentence with our guest here.
That's true.
With us, we have Dr. Richard Scott Noakes of the semi-defunct podcast.
Oh, we'll talk about on this podcast episode today why it's defunct. Oh, we'll get into that. Yes.
What was the name? It's been so long.
Pop Medieval.
Pop Medieval.
Yes.
And how a related text to this one killed that podcast.
Yeah.
Or at least put it on life support. We'll see.
Put it on life support. Yeah. It's in a coma. It may be resurrected soon. We might have a lot of fun here and then realize we missed doing a podcast together. Yeah. But Doc, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Dr. Richard Scott Noakes. I'm a professor of medieval literature at Troy University. But if you know me from Pop Medieval, was I called Professor Awesome on that one?
That's a good question.
We called you Doc.
Okay,
whatever. I've called you Doc for the past 30 years since I've
known
you.
We'll figure it out.
All right, there we go.
So,
has it been 30 years?
It's actually been more like 20.
It's 20. It has been so long.
Yeah.
It has been 21 years.
It's now where we're counting. We're in our third decade.
Yeah, that's really it.
Yeah, that's true.
God, stop aging us. Oh my God.
Anyway, so yes, I'm your special guest. And I was about to ask before we start recording, am I your first guest?
You are.
Yes. So I know that there's an order to this, having heard most of the episodes. I did confess I haven't heard all of them, but I don't know which ones I haven't heard. It's normally like I see the book, I'm like, meh, I'm not interested.
Yeah. Oh, but that's okay. That happens.
At some point, I'm going to rush to the front of the train and grab the controls and try to derail the whole thing. So that's my plan.
That's okay.
Yes, exactly.
Totally fine.
And we've asked you specifically to be on this podcast because of the book that we're doing.
Yep.
Engineer Mike, do you want to tell us what book you're forcing me to read?
Sure. I'm not forcing you to read it. You choose to do
this. I did not choose this book.
Because this podcast, like all podcasts, is a public service to humanity. And you choose every 2 or 3 weeks to bring your knowledge to the world. And I thank you for that. The doc thanks you. The world thanks you, Nina.
Mm.
Okay.
All of Arda thanks you.
Yep. Yeah, there we go.
Oh. This is... Okay. See, I get that reference now.
Now you do. Finally. It's only taken 20 years of me begging and pleading. Anyway. But nobody was forced. Just cajoled. So the book that none of us were forced into reading this week is The Silmarillion by J.R.R. Tolkien.
I'm holding it up to the
camera. Even though technically it's really by his son, Christopher Tolkien.
It's edited by Christopher Tolkien.
Yeah. It was released, and correct me if I'm wrong, Noakes, this was released posthumously.
I believe so, yeah.
From writings that he had been scribbling together and making for a very long time, since before The Lord of the Rings, long before Lord of the Rings. And after his death, his son Christopher Tolkien collected it all together and made it into a very passable novel called The Silmarillion, which to many super nerds, they like better than Lord of the Rings. They'll say, Lord of the Rings, hey, that's a good pop novel. That's fun. You know, very approachable for ages like 8 and up. The Silmarillion is a very academic work. It is to be studied, to be pored through, checked for consistency, talked about endlessly.
Keep going.
And that's the Silmarillion. So just to be clear, We're not talking about Lord of the Rings today, just the Silmarillion.
But before we get to that, we're going to talk about what we're reading this
That's
week.
That's true.
Well, we're going to extend that question first to Doc. Doc, what are you reading?
All right.
Or what have you been reading lately?
So, one of the things that actually that a couple, like a year and a half ago, first put the other podcast on hiatus was I had retina surgery, and it was making it very hard for me to do things. So I've had a couple of eye surgeries since then, and the kind of eye surgery I had causes cataracts.
Oh, God.
I have cataract at much younger age than I was. So I didn't have a cataract, and then suddenly I have a cataract, and I just had cataract surgery. And so that's not true to say I can't really read with my eyes. I can, but I'm doing almost all of my eye reading for work, and so I've been listening to audiobooks mad.
Interesting.
And essentially... what I've been doing is listening through the first chapters catalog, to be honest.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Very cool.
Thank you.
It's been really a delight. The worst part, though, was I was listening to, you haven't done this in first chapters, but I was listening to the Virga series, which is a five-book series in audiobook form. And I got to the end of book four and thought that was the end and thought that was a terrible way to end the series, only to find out that for some reason, Audible, which is what I use as my audiobook, does not have book five. And so now I have to wait until my eyes get better so I can hear book five.
You can't just wait till they get done. The book just came out, so the audiobook is going to take some time.
I need it now before I forget everything. So I'm not,
it did end terribly.
So I'm not going to honor that. I'm going to honor the only thing I've really read that isn't work-related and isn't something you've already done, which is Brandon Sanderson's The Frugal Wizard's Handbook for Surviving Medieval England. Somebody who's really loves Brandon Sanderson. I've read nothing by him. I didn't want to start a series if I didn't like him, but he gave me this one, or he suggested as a standalone. It was a good, nice little standalone. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. That's Brandon Sanderson, The Frugal Wizard's Handbook for Surviving Medieval England.
I've actually read three Brandon Sanderson novels, and many of our listeners may know he was the author who was tasked with finishing up Robert Jordan's famous Wheel of Time series after Robert Jordan passed away. Very much like today's book, The Silmarillion. Brilliant. The last three books in the Wheel of Time series were released posthumously from Robert Jordan's notes. Though, unlike, I don't know actually if Tolkien got to do this with his son or not, but Robert Jordan in his dying years worked with Brandon Sanderson on kind of how the books would come about. And I have to admit, they were three very good books. I read all three of them to finish up the Wheel of Time series. Didn't hate what I read. I thought it was very fine. And not to mention, it felt completely in line with the spirit of the books as they were written previously by Robert Jordan. Brandon Sanderson seems to be a capable author. Now, I get Brandon Sanderson confused a lot with another author called Kevin J. Anderson. Brandon Sanderson, Kevin J. Anderson, these names sound very similar in my head. Kevin J. Anderson, I do not like, can say nothing nice about.
Well, now that we know how you feel about that author.
About Kevin J. Anderson, yes.
What have you been reading lately?
Okay, what I have been reading, all right, is a book.
Hopefully they're better than Kevin J. Anderson.
Yeah, two books, actually three. I'm finishing up a graphic novel that was given to me by actually Dr. Noakes here on this podcast. Beowulf by... oh, what's his name? Zach Wienersmith.
Yeah.
That I haven't had a chance to talk to you about. You gave it to me. I have to admit, I have been reading it. And you know, at first I thought it was kind of cutesy. I was like, oh, this is a cute graphic novel, which I'll admit never really been my thing, graphic novels. I'm reading this and I'm flipping through it. I'm looking at the artwork and looking at the work that was done into adapting Beowulf this format. And I'm about 40 or 50 pages into Beowulf, and I'm like, this is absolutely delightful. There is so much love and care put into this thing to make it both something you could probably read to kids, like if you're a nerdy medievalist and you've got kids that you would love to be nerdy medievalists to when they grow up, you could read this to them. But then also, if you're just an adult reading this, you will love seeing how somebody has retold the story of Beowulf as like a children's story, but one featuring little children. And it's actually just absolutely delightful. Not to mention it looks wonderful. And most certainly, I think it was nominated for a Hugo. That's Beowulf. All right, the second book I'm reading is a book I can't talk about. It's a pre-production book that will be published in the future. I'm enjoying that. Wish I could talk more about that. I can't. But then the third book I'm reading is a much older book by an author we haven't done a work of on this podcast yet, but I hope we will one day. Larry Niven had a very famous novel of his called The Moat in God's Eye. I had always heard about it, had never read it. I don't know if have you read it, Noakes, or you heard about
it? I have.
Very neat. It's not like Larry Niven's other books. It's way more, very like militaristic, but once again, not in a way that's jingoistic. It's militaristic and that just that the setting is like a space navy kind of ship. But there's also, there are lines in this book that have definitely inspired works that have come after it. I'm reading one of those key texts that, oh, every nerd that came after this point had obviously read this. There are parts where they're talking about the God Emperor of Mankind in this book, which this book came out years before Warhammer 40K. A lot of this terminology that I'm reading in this book was just adopted to the Warhammer 40K universe. A ton of it. Wow, those nerds had clearly read this book. So I'm really enjoying that.
Great. For myself, to tie into the subject matter of this podcast, I am, or I have been reading, The Token Companion. I'm holding it up.
Oh, you're reading this weeks ago, right?
I was reading this today. I started reading this today. I had to read this to get through The Silmarillion. The Token Companion, the indispensable guide to the wondrous legends, history, languages, and peoples of Middle-earth by J.C.A. Tyler?
It could be J.C.A. Tyler, J.F.A. Tyler.
This is basically a glossary of Tolkien terms. So I just opened it randomly. So here is like Gladden, Gladdenfields, Glamdring, and Orcrist, Glanduin. Here's Gimli. Gimli, oh. Elfriend.
Yep.
And then like I skip like forward a little bit. Here's King Under the Mountain, Kinstrife. All of this stuff did help me a lot as I was going through the Silmarillion because the Silmarillion is very dense.
Yes.
So, oh, look, I opened up to Bilbo Baggins. Good. I actually don't need that part. Well, no, I do because there's a bunch of stuff I'm just looking at right now. But yeah, I recommend this. And since we're just about to segue into the Silmarillion, I do recommend if you have just cursory knowledge of Lord of the Rings or Hobbit or any of that world and you are not a hardcore fan of it, if you just are interested and you said, well, I like the book or I like the movie, let me get interested in the Silmarillion, and no one has warned you about the Silmarillion before, you're probably going to need a companion piece like this if you don't want to Wikipedia everything or Tokenpedia. I don't know if there's a Tokenpedia.
There is.
There probably is. Hobbitpedia?
It's Tokenpedia.
So yeah, I do recommend this book because it is really helpful and it does break down everything into very simple explanations and descriptions. So yeah, give it a shot.
Yep.
The Tolkien Companion.
Fun story. This is actually the second Tolkien encyclopedia I've had that Nina is holding. My first one, which I liked far better. I lost it sometime as a young man in one of my many moves. And I wish I could have kept it because this one is pretty good. But the other one I had, I just remember it being even better. It was almost intended specifically just for the Silmarillion. It was definitely like a Silmarillion companion nearly, and oh, I love just reading through that book.
It is shocking that that's the only one you have because Michael Drout,
how many?
The great yeah. Michael Drout,
uh-huh.
He published a Tolkien encyclopedia, and I contributed to it. So,
well, I need to own this then.
Worlds collide, and yet.
There we go.
After I received grief for having skipped certain episodes of this, you skipped the one book that has helped. You know two of the people
Fine.
Involved
that
in
would
that
have
book.
Helped.
Give me a list of all the books that you've actually contributed to significantly, and I will
give
buy.
Give me your bibliography.
I'll buy them all.
I'll forward you my CV.
There we
there
go.
You go.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so I introduced the book we're talking about this week is The Silmarillion by J.R.R. Tolkien, released posthumously after his death, largely edited by his son Christopher Tolkien. It is the tale of the creation of the world, Middle-earth, and how it was created from nothing by Iluvatar, and I'm going to get all these names incorrectly, I'm sure.
That's why we have Doc here.
That's true, yeah. Iluvatar. Now, you called him a different name because he has multiple names, you know, as the one.
Ea and Iluvatar, right? Those are the two
yeah,
names.
Ea, Air, yeah, Iluvatar.
It's
yeah.
Eru, a.k.a. Oh. Iluvatar.
Oh, yeah, Iluvatar, right. Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. I had to school you guys.
That's okay. Well, I remember the Kenya word, so Iluvatar. You know, who created the world, created the Valar, who served him, and their eventual creation of the elves and men and dwarves and that sort of thing. How some of the elves were corrected, turned into orcs. It tells a lot of the diaspora of the elves, how they once lived in a promised land and had to be cast out of that, and eventually created kingdoms and ruled over lands. And this is all long before the events of Lord of the Rings. And it wasn't until many, many, many years later that I realized, oh, this entire book is set up exactly like the Tanakh. It's just the Tanakh. It even has two origin stories at the beginning of it, just like the Tanakh.
We'll get to that.
You probably noticed some of that. It's done like that on purpose. It's not like Christopher Tolkien was stealing the form of the Bible or something like that. That's just what J.R. Tolkien was thinking of when he created this fantasy world. It was just a good, handy way to organize the Silmarillion as well.
So, Doc, do you want to talk a little bit about the Rings of Power?
Oh, the show?
And how that ultimately led to the downfall of...
Top
Medieval. Just briefly.
Yes, so, very briefly, Amazon decided that they were going to license Lord of the Rings stuff. But weirdly, they weren't able to license the Silmarillion itself, so they end up talking around it and like putting references to it. And so they created this series, which is coming into its second season, called The Rings of Power, and we were skeptical of it, I think. At least I was skeptical of it. But oh boy, I was not skeptical enough. So we decided that we were going to make, I think, the season finale of a season, us doing a watch through of it, which is not our normal format.
You're talking about Pop Medieval.
Oh, the Pop Medieval. Yeah. Yes, the Pop Medieval podcast. Yeah. And so we did. So first of all, if anyone here has not seen The Rings of Power, move to another planet.
Yeah.
It is bad in every way. It is only good if you hate J.R.R. Tolkien and want to see all of his works urinated upon.
Yeah.
Because it's not even the nerd, you know, why didn't you include Bombadil in this? No, it's not even that.
Yeah.
It's as a work of art, it fails on about every level.
Yeah.
The only thing it did was it did reveal to me some actors who I thought, they have this really garbage material and yet they're doing something with it. Okay, I like them.
Yeah.
That's basically it. Honestly, I don't feel like Pop Medieval was running out of juice at the end.
It
was so hard to return to because it was such a horrible experience watching that thing and having to talk about it. It's Roth slew the Pop Medieval podcast, so, or at least harmed it greatly.
It was a bad confluence of events where we watched the season finale together your eye messed up.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I think...
It hurt your eye.
Yeah, I think Rings of Power ruined
your eyes.
A
blood vessel popped in your eye. You were so mad.
That's right. That's what it was. I was working out. I was doing those bench presses and I was thinking about how mad I was and just my eyeballs exploded.
Yeah. So my personal take on it is that I was not a huge fan of the Tolkienverse. I'm still not. Like, I'm not a hardcore fan of it. I respect the material now. A couple years ago, I sat down and I watched all 12 hours of The Lord of the Rings. So The Fellowship of the Ring, Towers.
The extended edition.
And Return of the King. So I watched all of them, the extended stuff, and I liked that.
Yeah.
Like, I thought the extended versions were so much better because they included scenes that explained stuff that I feel like the theatrical version did not. And I wasn't lost. So I was like, okay, I have a much better understanding and a stronger respect of the source material.
You might be the only person I've ever encountered in my life that did not like the theatrical versions of Lord of the Rings, but loved the extended edition.
I did. Yeah. I truly did.
Yeah.
And so when The Rings of Power came out, I thought, for a lot of really stupid political reasons, people hated The Rings of Power. And when I watched it, I thought, wow, you guys are missing the forest for the trees. This show is bad because...
Everything else.
And even I'm not that steeped in the lore of Tolkien. And you guys are completely wrong about everything else. But anyway, we sat down, we watched the end, and I'm like, this was crap. But let's do another episode. And then we didn't. We may have done one more episode and then we're just like, no, we can't do this.
I don't think we even did another episode after that. I can't remember.
That was it. The show killed our spirit. That show killed our spirits to just talk about medievalism.
Basically, it was Game of Thrones. That's what it was. It was like the end of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. The last season of Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I have no desire to see House of the Dragon. It's in its second season right now. I'm like, I don't. I already know what's going to happen. I already know that this show is going to lead is a prequel to a really, really shitty other show.
Yeah.
And so, no, that's really what happened.
Yeah.
What that means is First Chapters fans have to be aware that the Silmarillion could kill this podcast. Tolkien adaptations have killed our podcast before.
No. I will promise you, like, if you are listening to this podcast and you have never read anything Lord of the Ringsy before, I'm going to tell you right now, you can listen to this podcast episode, but do not read the Silmarillion.
No.
Like, I'm going to tell,
no,
like,
of course not.
No.
Yeah.
Your introduction to the Lord of the Rings, if you're curious, should be The Hobbit.
It should be The Hobbit, number one.
Yeah.
Then you read Lord of the Rings. And then when you grow up older and become a man or a woman and settle down and have a family, just like Samwise Gamgee did, then finally you can pick up the Silmarillion when you reach the age of 40. Much like the Kabbalah, you pick up the Silmarillion and you start pouring through its mysteries, that kind of
thing. But I do want to talk about how much I read. So I read, and you guys are going to be surprised. Do you guys want to guess how much I read?
I bet you read the first two chapters, which are origin stories, which have funny names. I'm going to say you read 3 chapters.
Doc, you want
to
guess?
I think you probably were trying to get all the way to the story of the Silmars, but there is a section before that, which is a lot of descriptions of gods and what they did. So yep, I'm going to say, I don't know how many chapters it would be, but I'm going to say you got 2/3 of the way to just before the beginning of the Silmars.
Actually, Doc was absolutely right. I read the Annandale.
Yep, that's the beginning. That's the creation of the world.
And I read the Valaquenta.
Oh, the Valaquenta. Yeah, that's the description of all the gods.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was enough for me to understand, like, what was going on.
Yeah. You know, you don't even get into the elves at all, I don't think, by that point.
They
really talk
about the elves and the humans.
Oh, they do? Okay, yeah. In the Valaquenta? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's enough of a setup.
You get all the creation of the major races there, I think.
Yeah.
You do.
Oh, so they talk about, the smith who created the dwarves?
Olye. I'm going to mispronounce all these words, so whoever's listening and you guys can correct me if you remember.
We should know this.
It's Olye.
A-U-L-E.
Yeah, with E with an umlaut over
probably
it.
Probably Olye.
I didn't know he was the smith until the Valaquenta. Right.
Yeah.
It just said, like, in the creation myth, I call it the creation myth, that he's obsessed or he's interested in the fabric of the earth, and I thought, oh, earth, he's probably a dwarf.
Mm.
And then later on in the Valaquenta, it says, oh, he's the smith and he's in charge of the gems and the stuff like that.
He created
dwarves. So what I did, I'm gonna go over each of the sections as best as I can, not going word by word, the general overview. In the Annandale, I'm going to fuck that up.
Let us figure this out. Let's read this.
What is that called?
I'm going to say it's the Annulindale.
Annulindale. Okay. Yep. In the Annulindale, I'm going to give you my first impressions. A lot of this stuff is wrong because I corrected myself in the subsequent little sections of the Valaquente.
Okay.
How it starts off with is that Iluvatar guy.
The one.
Yeah, he makes...
The hidden flame.
Yeah, the guy with the hidden flame. All right, he creates music. He's like this giant composer. I mean, he creates the Valar, but we don't know they're the Valar yet. I mean, they're kind of siloed off from each other. They can sing and they can create music. They don't really hear or see what each other are composing.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is someone named Melkor. He's an Ainur and he gets something to compose, but very much like creation myth via John Milton. He is like, well, I don't really like my job there. I want to be as powerful as this Iluvatar guy. To use like a music metaphor, that's not how you play jazz. You have to play off someone else. And he decides to go off script a bit. He messes everything up. Well, that pisses Iluvatar off a lot. And to punish him, he says, you're not allowed to make music anymore. In fact, I'm going to show you what you managed to fuck up. And it turns out he's composing the world. Yep. That's kind of what I got so far from the first creation myth.
Mm-hmm.
He decides to show all the Ainur what the earth was, is, and is going to be as he sees it. And they're like, oh, this is so beautiful. We want a part of it. And he shows them the men and the elves. That's how he knew there were men and elves.
There you go. Yep.
So he decides to give them all a part, basically a job in making the world better. He gives Manwë the air and the wind. He gives Olye the fabric of the earth, so the mountains and stuff like that. Yep. Olmo is the water, and then of course Melkor is fire.
Hmm.
And that's going to be very, very important later on.
Mm-hmm.
And then he renames them the Valar, basically the powers of Ea. I thought this was really funny because at the end of this segment, Manwë, Olye, and Olmo, they do most of the work and they start creating the work. And Melkor, he's pouting because he lost most of his power. Anytime they create something, he destroys it. Manwë, who turns out to be his biggest rival, he gets really pissed off at him and says, you keep destroying everything that we're creating. And they start fighting with each other. That is what I got from that. I did not like that chapter at all because it's written very biblically. Like, yes, so it's written very King James style biblically. It's very dense, and I'm like, oh God, am I? This is really ridiculous. Immediately after it, 7 or 8 pages into the Vala Quinta, you get to the account of the Valar and the Maiar according to the lore of the Elder. It is like 2 or 3 paragraphs where it basically summarizes everything that happened, and I'm like, why did I read all those 10 pages? Why didn't I just skip to this? Yeah.
This is just like the Torah.
Yeah, it is just like the Torah where it's just, you know, another creation myth. It's like, okay, so let me just sum up what happened and correct exactly what went wrong there. So then it starts naming off the 7 lords and the 7 ladies of the Valar, and it names them. I'm not going to go through all of them because that's not important. Of course, conveniently, in the original creation myth, women are left out.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah. Also, it points out that Melkor is no longer counted as one of the Valar.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah, so there's one lady, her name is Varda, or also called Elbereth. She's the Lady of the Stars, she's the most important, and she's booed up with that Manway guy in the wind. And then, of course, that's when it says that Olye guy is the smith, or he's the master of the crafts and the gems and the gold. His spouse is Yavanna, who's the giver of fruits. And here's where I really, really like the names. They stop being hard to pronounce, but it goes on and on, starts naming. And my joke here is basically, this is just the avote of the Amidah.
Is it?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. You're right. That's part of a typical Jewish term. That's exactly what this is. And I'm sure J.R.R. Tolkien knew
that. Yes. Yeah. Where they're just naming the elders.
And their wives. Yeah.
So far, how am I doing?
You've read it. Okay. You clearly have read it. You're not lying.
And then in the section called Of the Maiar, this is other spirits that came along with the Valar, the helpers of the Valar. The one major point that I want to point out, there's this one Maiar, his name is Ose. He was a vassal of Olmo, who again was the guy of the sea. There was not the god of the sea, but more like a demigod. Very good to point out that Melkor could never tame the sea. He tried to lure this Ose away to his side. He's like, hey, why don't you come work for me? And this Olmo guy, I'm going to give you everything that he has. That doesn't work. He's kind of tempted, but that doesn't fall through. And then the section called Of the Enemies, Melkor, and this is where it gets really, really interesting, really important if you've seen Lord of the Rings or if you've read Lord of the Rings before. The elves come around. The elves do not want to call him Melkor anymore. They call him Morgoth. The dark enemy.
Or if you've seen Amazon's Rings of Power, Morgoth.
So many rolled R's in that stupid show.
Oh my God.
They point out that those drawn to him were corrupted by his fire, and that's how we got the Balrogs. And then the desire to possess things like that eternal flame or a flame that never went out drove him from just having, you know, minor arrogance and contempt to this burning rage. And again, I want to point out like the whole John Milton's Paradise Lost. The final thing I want to point out here is that his greatest servant, Morgoth, his greatest servant was originally a servant of Olye, the smith. His name was Sauron.
Or Sauron.
Or Sauron. Sorry, Sauron.
We do know it.
Yep. So everything that I did not understand in that original creation myth, it made a lot of sense once I kept reading.
Well, good.
So even though I hated that creation myth, I kept reading and it actually made a lot of sense.
I'm glad you read. Unlike certain other books I've given you, where you gave up after one prologue, with this book, you actually kept reading past the prologue.
You're still salty about that one
I am
book.
Still salty about the Werner Vinge book, because the man had just died, and you couldn't read more than just the short prologue of his most famous work.
Got so mad at me
because
I didn't read anymore. Because it was a boring-ass book.
With the Silmarillion, I thank you for at least getting past the prologue and into kind of the first real chapter.
Well, anyway, so answered Engineer Mike's request that he's been begging me for 20 years. I read
some of the Silmarillion.
Yes.
Yeah, to read part of it at least.
Yes. So how did I do?
No, that's fine. You got it.
In terms of how I interpret it.
Pretty good. So
okay.
Some things I would point out.
Please do.
Is that Tolkien had this idea of the sub-creation. This has to do with the real world. And essentially, he and some other folks like
C.S. Lewis,
yeah. They were kind of proponents of this idea. And the idea is that, well, man is created in God's image. What does that mean? Well, what that means is we're created to be creators. And so when he's creating this world, he's basically doing it, I guess, as an act of worship in some way as he's building all these things. And so he thinks that this is true for all kind of created works, right? That they're all acts of sub-creation out of God's creation. So why does that matter when you're just like, this is similar to the creation myths of the Tanakh? Well, he's also, of course, as a medievalist, he's particularly interested in the Northern Germanic stories. One of the things, the Northern Germanic myths that come down to us, they tend to come down through guys like Snorri Sturluson, who was himself a Christian, who's trying to figure out, like, what do we do with all these gods? Because we know we're Christians, so we know that, like, Zeus and, wrong set of gods, sorry, Thor and Odin and those guys, they're not real gods, right? So his solution was to say... His solution was to say, like, well, they were just really powerful kings who had magic. Well, Tolkien takes that, and he takes that same kind of Jewish creation myth, which is his own myth, right? Is a good Roman Catholic, right? And what he does is he says, well, maybe you've got God and these other gods, what we think of as the polytheistic gods.
For the record, when referring to gods, Noakes used air quotes.
Yes, right. That there is the one God, and he creates a bunch of lesser gods. And gives them their areas to be in charge of. And then below those, you get the Maia, who are kind of like angelic beings. And so he's able to take this biblical account and actually square it with the polytheistic Germanic accounts that he really wants to...
I see.
He really wants to adapt
from
England, right? He wants to take those together. But then within the story, they're giving areas of creation, but their areas of creation are also acts of subcreation based upon what Ilúvatar has done.
Yeah.
This idea of everything flows out. And, you know, it's not a long section. It's a brief bit, but where Ilúvatar is like, now, Melkor, stop, you're rebelling. He also says, but by the way, I knew you were going to do this. I planned for it all along. And there's this kind of idea that everything is under Ilúvatar's power, a very kind of Christian idea to kind of bring that into the polytheistic world.
Yeah.
Another thing I would say, not because it's relevant to this particularly, but Christopher Tolkien, we end up talking about book series that are edited by other people later on, often the children of them. And sometimes it's a cash grab by either the author's estate or by the publishing company that is able to do it. Sometimes they do a really good workmanlike job. Christopher Tolkien really is, or was, because he passed away a couple years back, really was a really great scholar in his own right. Really, really was.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at the Silmarillion, he makes this case, I think, that this is not a book. It's not one book. This is kind of an anthology of a bunch of different things that my father put together. And the reason you haven't even gotten to the Silmars, and you're really deep into the book, you haven't gotten to the Silmars yet.
Yeah.
Because he's like, well, that's the only thing that's really like a narrative story in it. And everything else is kind of set up like myth. And that's why it's called that. But if you go from section to section, they're all supposed to kind of hold together more or less true. And so fans of Peter Jackson films, Christopher Tolkien, threw a lot of shade on them, and he had gotten a kind of bad name among a certain kind of nerd. And I think it's really unfair, because even if you don't like his opposition to the films, he certainly was a great scholar.
Yeah.
I cannot think of another author whose child actually shepherded through his literary heritage better than Christopher Tolkien. And there have been some really good ones, but no one like him. And when we're seeing here, he's trying to put order to something because people want order to it that there isn't really a lot of order to. He's taking a bunch of notebooks and putting it together and trying to make a story out of it.
Very, very good point. Yeah. And I know on previous episodes of Pop Medieval, we did bring up Christopher Tolkien. And we brought up his legacy and how much of a legacy he had to inherit from his father.
Yeah.
And what that meant and how much respect not just you and I had for him, but the entire medieval community had for him doing that. Yeah. He wasn't a writer. He was a scholar.
Medieval scholars are like, he knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So I've got two questions for you, Doc, before we wrap this thing up. One, going back to the original creation myth that's in the Silmarillion, one, what is the significance with the music? Like, there's so much talk about, like, so Ilúvatar, he creates the world with music, the flowing melodies and the musical instruments. Why use that metaphor?
I mean, I think he's playing off of the Jewish tradition of speech, right? That God speaks the cosmos into existence. And his version of that is, well, this is a kind of music, right?
That makes sense. And then my second question is, what happens to Ilúvatar? Because pretty much after the creation myth, he's gone. He sends the Valar to Earth, as we know, I'm using air quotes myself. I've set the world up. Now you guys are in charge of essentially the elements. Now sculpt it, create it. Then he just kind of disappears from the narrative. Like, does he come back later in the Silmarillion, or is he just gone?
I think he's gone. There are references to it, lots of references to him. People will talk about these references. But more or less, from beginning to end, you start off in the Silmarillion and it is cosmic in scope. Mm-hmm. And if there's any progression in it, because some stories get retold in different, from different notebooks, retold in different ways, right? If there's any progression, it's not just a progression through time, but it's a progression from the cosmic forces down to what are the Valar doing, down to what are the Maiar doing, down to what are the elves and humans and dwarves and those people doing.
Yeah.
And it just sort of gets more down to earth or down to Arda, if you will, at the end. As it goes through. And so I think Iluvatar doesn't appear so much, not because he's trying to suggest a kind of clockwork universe, a kind of deistic universe, but rather the focal point has kind of gotten more and more down to what's going on Arda rather than what's going on in the cosmic way. And I think we're left to assume that all this big drama is playing out, this musical drama is playing out, right? You can think about all of the story as an opera. He's already got it written how it's going to happen. And so when you hear characters saying things in the more narrative kinds of stories where, well, this is probably the way things were supposed to work out, you know, you'll occasionally have characters say something like that. And it's not merely a kind of fatalism, but a sense that, yeah, well, Iluvatar is over everything. And so even though we don't talk about him much, that he's really behind everything. Yeah. So everything will work out to the good eventually. And spoiler, it does.
In the Silmarillion, Iluvatar does appear one more time.
When does he appear again? I'm trying to remember now.
It is in the Akalabeth, which is the fall of Numenor.
Ah, yeah.
That, not to spoil season 2 of Amazon's Rings of Power. No,
we weren't going to watch.
I'm going to spoil season 2 of Amazon Rings of Power because I hate the stupid show. When Numenor falls, when Numenor, the force of Numenor invade the Undying Lands, the power of Numenor is so great that even the Valar cannot defeat Numenor. And the Numenoreans are about to defeat the Valar themselves, the powers themselves.
Yes.
So in a fit of desperation, Manwë appeals directly to Iluvatar, and Iluvatar destroys the Numenoreans. That is,
that's not fair. They got a cheat code.
Well, I mean, the Numenoreans should have known. They should have known better, yeah.
I'm going to break the format here by asking the nerdiest question ever. That certain nerds who just listened just so they could hear this. I'm going to ask this of Engineer Mike about a character you haven't even gotten to. Ungoliant. Yes, sorry.
The spider. Yeah. I know that one.
Oh, you got that far.
Shelob's mother.
Descendant of Shelob. I don't know if it's Shelob's mother. I think it's just a descendant of Shelob. Well, an ancestor of Shelob.
The ancestor of all the... Here's the question I have. This is the nerdiest question ever.
Okay.
So it's explicitly said that she came from beyond Arda. So here's my question. Is she an alien?
That is a good question. She is from the realm beyond Iluvatar's power. And
is she more powerful than Iluvatar?
She is not more powerful than Iluvatar.
I can't believe I just asked that question.
That's okay. No, she definitely hides in the shadows away from Iluvatar. But if you view Arda as the world, then yes, Ungoliant is definitely, let's say, an extra Ardian creature. Like, we would call it an alien, yeah.
Extraterrestrial, then.
Yeah, extraterrestrial, yeah.
So you're going with alien?
Yes. Okay. Ungoliant comes from the darkness within which Iluvatar created the world.
Yeah.
All the stuff that was left behind when God created the world, that there were perhaps things in that darkness that are separate from God, not more powerful than God, but
there's
like
100% that in Mishnah.
There you go.
I don't think they talk about spiders, but
no. This was J.R.R. Tolkien's kind of way of showing that. I'm sure J.R.R. Tolkien had read some of the Mishnah. He was a very, very learned guy.
So we got to wrap this up, but go ahead and ask me a question.
All right, the two questions are: first things first, do you think the first chapters you read work as first chapters?
The very first chapter I read, the Enulin Dale is not a good first chapter.
Okay.
No.
Weirdly enough, you technically did not read chapter 1. You got through basically prologue 1 and prologue 2. The Silmarillion has 2 prologues. You read them. As far as I'm concerned, that's the first kind of chapter of the book.
The first creation myth is not a good first chapter. No, it is boring. Mm-hmm. The Alan Dali is not a good first chapter. Okay. It is, again, like I said, it is very,
boring.
Very King Jamesy biblical. Yes. It is dense to read through, and it is slow moving. I would go ahead and skip that chapter and immediately go to the Vala Quinta. Yeah, just start there and then go back. Yeah. To the
That's
Alan
very Dali. True. Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder why it was constructed like that. Sure, and the second question is, would you read more?
Okay. I can't believe I'm going to say
Oh, no. Oh. No. Oh, my goodness. Oh, no.
I'm actually going to read more.
Wow. Oh, hey.
Oh, my God.
Well, I think...
And it's because I've been reading the Tanakh, and now I want to read more.
Oh, if you're looking for symmetry and symbolism like that,
yeah.
You're just going to find more it's
like,
and more.
I'm like, okay, yeah. This is... I'm actually interested in what's going to happen. And also, because of the fucking Rings of Power, I want to see how badly they screwed
Thank
up.
Thank you, God.
If the Rings of Power was so bad, it makes me want to read the Silmarillion. Oh, God. That right there is their stinger. It's like so bad you'll want to read this book.
Here's the thing, Nina. I believe by you continuing to read this book, you will heal the wound that was created in all of us in Pop Medieval when we tried to watch Rings of Power. Undo that.
That is possible. Yeah. So let me tell you the benefit of reading the Silmarillion. I think like the first time I read the Silmarillion, I was like, what is this? Like, what is happening here? But all the details you get in there are details that then bring a richness to the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings and those. So, for example, one thing that you come to realize, this is not a big secret, you don't have to be deep into the lore to get this, is, well, why doesn't like Aragorn learn magic? Why are there only these wizards? It's because the wizards are Maia. They're not actually humans.
Yeah.
They're angelic beings. And so when Gandalf dies and comes back, he kind of isn't exactly resurrected. It's more of he's sent back by the Valar, right? They're like, okay, your job's not done. The gods send him back. You also come to realize that one of the holders of a ring of power is Gandalf. And what his ring does... Yep. And how a lot of the weird, dumb things he seems to do, like, why is he hanging out at Bilbo Baggins' house to say, hey, you, not a gentleman farmer, a country gentleman here, you're gonna go off and fight dragons. Why would he do that? And you realize that all that is connected to this kind of broader lore about why he would go and pick the least likely person and how he's manages to make things happen in that.
You know, my final thought here is that I know they didn't really have the rights to the Silmarillion, the Silmarillion could have been a really interesting series.
I know.
Just the creation myth or like something from it. You can't say it's unfilmable because there's structure here. I have not gotten that far into it, and I no promises that I'm going to get the entire way through it. But from what I've read, I'm like, okay, I can see this being turned into a short series. I can be, or like a limited series, or I can see the episodes in it.
Yeah.
Like these are characters. They might not be three-dimensional right now, but I can see someone sitting down writing a script and turning them into actual characters. Yeah, so
it'll turn into that. Yeah, it, to me, it's very episodic.
And it gets more structured as it goes through. So if you're like, I see structure in what I've seen already, it actually becomes more of a structured narrative later on, the later parts of it.
The very first book I ever read voluntarily was just The Two Towers. It was just an old tattered copy of just The Two Towers. Never read The Fellowship of the Ring. Never got to find out what happened afterwards for a very long time. But just The Two Towers. I was like, wow, this is interesting. I love this world. I wonder if there's more to it. You know, this is before the internet. The other book my parents had was The Silmarillion. So what I did was I went straight from reading just The Two Towers, finishing up, and said, hey, I'd love to know more of this extended universe. Is there any more? And then I started reading The Silmarillion, and I was like, what the hell is this? Is this the same world? What the fuck's going on here? It's got elves and orcs, and it's ostensibly on what I think is Middle Earth, but this is completely different. Is this like a different time? I had no idea. I probably read The Silmarillion 3 or 4 times. It was one of the only books I had. And I know the thing forward and backwards. And honestly, Nina, you could flip through the Tolkien Companion right now, pick a random name, that if it's only from the Silmarillion, I will probably be able to tell you where in the book it goes.
Elfhelm.
I don't know that one. Never mind. Well, is that a person or a place?
Anyway, we'll all right, we got it. We're so out of time here. We're so out of time. All right, everybody. Doc, how we usually sign off is we tell everyone to keep reading. I'll let you say it first. Then Engineer Mike's gonna say it, then I'll say it.
Oh, that's not from the Silmarillion. That's not from the Silmarillion.
I just picked a random word. Okay,
you picked the one thing not from the Silmarillion.
I just picked, all right. All right, everybody.
Keep reading.
Keep reading.
Keep reading.
Thanks for listening to First Chapters, a podcast from Grey Cat Books. Your hosts were Nina McNamara and Engineer Mike. Our music was provided by Alex Productions and Virtua Jams. Check out our website at greycatbooks.com for links to our credits. Thanks again for listening.
They wear sunglasses at night.
Yeah. Well, there's no more heat being created in the center of the
star. Don't mess around with the dwarf.
And what's happening is just leftover heat radiating. I'm talking about the neat fundamental mechanics of the entire universe.
This is not a science
here.
Podcast.
You guys are talking about sunglasses.
This is barely a book podcast.
I'm trying to bring this up to the level of... Yeah, that's true.